Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And today's Thursday, May 21st. We're about 30% into the season, about 50 games. I'm Vlad Sedler at RotoGut. I'm joined by Boom 62, Jason Anthony, maybe Boom 61 soon. What's up? What's happening, Jay?
Still too much work to change the handle, so it's staying 62. Yes. Not lazy or anything, but yeah, not much. It's been a taxing first three, 4 days of this week. What are we in, week 8 or 9 of the fantasy season? It seems every pitcher's start got absolutely destroyed. I think we coined it Black Monday.
Yeah,
it is ugly, and it was tough to look at my teams. And I got a lot of Robbie Ray, and that just put the cherry on top when our great manager, Tony Vitello, decided to leave him out there to just kind of keep getting hit into the fifth inning until he got hit by a line drive. That's what took him out, not the 11 runs.
So. No. You know, it's crazy. I mean, we've been at this for a very long time, as have a lot of our listeners. And it's funny how we're just gluttons for the punishment, right? Like, we decided this is what we want to do. We love it. And we can't be too mad. We can't be surprised when these things happen. Like, it's just impossible to be, you know, completely unscathed. Like, I remember, you know, I have Robbie Ray on one of my two mains, but one of my mains is I think a lot better than the other. And I'm like trying to remember, oh, did it happen on the good one or the bad one? You know, and it's, of course, it's always better when the bad stuff happens on teams that you already kind of don't like, or you don't think are in the mix. You want to keep your teams fresh, but everyone gets hammered, right? I mean, occasionally there's some lucky teams that you're looking at still has like a 2.30, you know, fantasy ERA, and they just happen to just have that mix of all the Schlittlers and Burnses and you Savages and whomever. But it comes for us all, and we have to be used to this. This is what we do.
Yeah, as much as we have to be used to this, we're never used to it, and it unfortunately could ruin a day. You know, we do this for fun, and it's not always fun, but you know, we recover and we keep grinding and try to find the best starts, and it doesn't always work. But you know, excited to talk some baseball with you today. I know we missed last week, so excited to get on this nice sunny Thursday and talk some ball and yeah, have some fun with it.
Well, let's start off with the Skubal scope, maybe the Snell scope. What's the latest with Tarik Skubal? I mean, he looks like he's on a very fast pace to be back. Do you think everything's going to be okay?
This is fascinating. I have a team. I have one Skubal share in the main, and I am in fourth on that league. And obviously, I could use him back sooner than later. This technology with the surgeries and everything, to have someone have loose bodies removed, which was used to be a minimum, it felt like, of 2 or 3 months, and to come back throwing, what has it been, 2 weeks?
It's been no time.
Yeah, and he threw a 37-pitch bullpen. I'd imagine he'd go out on a rehab, but you know, what level do we get him back? We don't know. You know, we still don't have enough data on the internal brace from the Tommy John with the effectiveness of guys coming back. You know, this is a pretty minor procedure overall, but we don't know if it's going to affect velocity, location. Is he going to not be himself when he comes back? But sure, exciting to see him back on the mound throwing.
Yeah, and especially if you've invested a first-round pick, you just have that, you know, the rain cloud over you, right? Like, I see people tweeting through it. You know, it's like begging him to come back. I understand. You spent a lot of money, and he was your number one pick, and he's been healthy and amazing, and you want him back. Like, to be able to compete for a league title, for an overall, I mean, you really need Skubal to be there in the mix. So, you know, just from like an overall baseball, what's good for baseball perspective, I hope he's back and I hope he's good. Blake Snell, on the other hand, I mean, issues that he's had, it's not just these loose bodies. Like, he's, you know, I mean, beyond like the elbow issues and the problems, and I know you're not a huge fan of his, but there's a lot of, like, you know, I know he doesn't listen to the pod, and Dodgers management, I don't think many do. Not many, like none. like, he's not the best character guy. He's kind of a, you know, he's like a bro. You know, I mean, sometimes there's nothing wrong with bros, but like, if you're getting paid millions of dollars, you're on this team, your franchise, like, kind of take this a little bit more seriously. I understand you have like a gaming addiction thing, but like, come on, man.
Yeah. You know, it's tough for us to talk about. We don't know the guy in person. but he does not seem to have that grind to get back on the mound and to help his team. You know, and there's twofold, right? The Dodgers don't necessarily need him back. They know they're going to be in the playoffs. Where Skubal's pitching not only for the Tigers need him, and they have every incentive to rush him back, he's pitching for a new contract. Snell got paid. And so it'll be interesting to see the Snell bids this week, because with Skubal coming back as quick, I'm assuming some people are going to anticipate the same timeline for Snell. I mean, I would double, if not triple, that timeline if I was a betting man, which I'm not, but I am, but I'm not, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
I just, each person's different, each drive's different, you know, how much you want to push yourself to fight through this. Blake Snell, it seems like a lost season for me. Now, you know, he could come in the playoffs and do another World Series push for the Dodgers. You know, that's all they care about at this point. So the regular season is not as relevant.
Yeah, Blake Snell, by the way, he's dropped over the last couple of weeks by 47% of teams in the NFBC OC. So you're going to see the bids on him. You'll see some big ones too, and then it'll be really varied. I think there are just some leagues where the people that are still active and bidding, because yes, people have dropped out at this point, they may not go crazy for him. So I think there'll be some, you know, some availability there. There are also a lot of other guys that are available that are in the mix. I mean, like, you know, we don't get too heavy into Fab, but like Griffin Jacks is starting to look really good. You know, there are some other guys there. You know, Trevor McDonald, if he can somehow keep a roster spot, a rotation spot, same with Zebby Matthews. So there's a lot going on the pitching side, of course, with Miami alone, Robbie Snelling, you know, like the Abe Simpson gif, you know, walks in and walks right out. Very sad.
Well, see you later.
Same with Braxton Garrett in the majors.
Yeah, I don't understand the Braxton Garrett thing. Snelling obviously deserved the spot, but he got injured. Braxton Garrett's not young. He's not old by any means, but he's proven it in the majors, and he still obviously doesn't have his control back. But I had three or four Braxton Garrett shares that I was pretty excited about. And for him to get sent back to AAA was interesting. I did not see that coming, but he has not been very effective so far. So it's probably a drop, because the upside in stashing of Braxton Garrett's not there. But I was pretty miffed that the Marlins of all teams would send him back down.
Yeah, he's an interesting profile, because he's a lefty. He doesn't throw particularly hard, but he knows how to get guys out. He's really good at, you know, pitch mix, sequencing, and just really like a good pitcher, like, but when he's on, because control is a part of his game. And that's what we saw in his two big seasons back when he was healthy, 22 and 23. And that's the part that's missing. And obviously there's more missing than that, but I think I think Garrett will come back and be decent. And so he's just somebody, I guess, you know, keep an eye on, you could say. As far as pitchers, there are a bunch of guys that are now out of the mix, unfortunately. And obviously the gruesome injury with Clay Holmes, Max Fried is a big hit. Chase Dolander, who we chased in Fab, McCullers, kind of who cares. Chris Bubich, that one kind of stinks. And then J.R. Ritchie. I know our boy Scott Jensen keeps telling me that he's not that good. I still think he will be good, but you know, he was not good in his time in the majors, unfortunately. So all those guys are out. And have you been affected or impacted by any of those?
You know, I will say it. I was one of the dummies that spent $130 on J.R. Ritchie, and I regretted it ever since. And I did not do enough digging on him. It was the Peyton Tolle week, and I basically just slashed my Tolle bids in half and got a lot of Ritchie, and I regretted it as soon as I got him. You know, you get busy and you don't do the work and you pay for it. So not only did I lose the Fab, I started him because of the sunk cost, and you know, he did not help me one bit. When you have a guy that doesn't miss bats in the minors and then doesn't throw strikes in the majors, there's not going to be a lot of success there. So I did. You know, it's funny. You look at that list, McCullers, Dolander, Ritchie. There's a lot of Fab dollars that just burnt up between those three. I know Dolander got picked up multiple times, dropped, and then yeah, and Ritchie obviously was the second big pickup behind Tolle that week, and there's a lot of money spent on him.
Yeah, and there's more of that to come, of course. You know, more Fab, more money being wasted. You know, I don't know. How do you feel about the fact that I'm a lot of times on some of the big spends, I'm really under. I'm usually pretty good. Everyone in the like 10 to 80 range, I'm usually are and kind of nailing where they end up on for an average winning bid with my Fab article. But I almost kind of purposely keep it low for some of these other guys because, you know, maybe it's my own like mental block, but I just couldn't justify recommending people spend $150+ for AJ Ewing and Henry Bolte.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's something we might even get into on this pod for a couple minutes is the spending, lack of spending that you've had this year. Because, you know, historically you're not as aggressive as the guilds or, you know, some of the other people, but you have a lot of money from what I saw in most of, not all of your leagues. And, you know, what is the thought process behind that? How are you going to take advantage of that, playing it out with, their, you know, 70% of the season left? You know, I'm pretty much about anywhere from 450 to 600 left across my leagues, which I think is right at the middle average. But you're over 700 in almost every league, right?
No. I'm actually closer to like, 600, 650 in most leagues. But in relation to most of other people in my league, I have one of the most. And so there's a few parts to this. I think it's just really grinding over the Fab research every week, looking back at past years in the off seasons and seeing how much money is being wasted. It's little things like not putting $7, $6, $5 for conditional bids when I can get them for like, you know, a dollar or two. Or if I'm, you know, up in the standings, I'll go the second dollar in case I'm a tiebreaker. Otherwise, I'll go dollars. So like little things like that, little edges that I think I have. And then, you know, just the fact that it's hard to justify a triple digit spend on prospects that you don't even know where they're going to be a month from now. Even seeing like, okay, well, this guy may come back, but he may not. But either way, like everything has to go right for this guy to just kind of go off. And I'm not just like an anti-prospects guy. Of course, you know, I love these players, but I'm just, you know, I don't know. I just feel like the grinding for the $30 to $60 range guys has always ended up working better for me. And I also want to have the hammer, right? Like, I feel like I have competitive teams. I want to be able to get who I want for the second half of the season and not really have to be in that position. Like, man, I just have no chance of getting them. And actually this is how I used to be. I think like pre-COVID, like when I had a really good run, like 2014 to 2019, I was winning most of my OCs and if like three or four main events, titles, that's what I was doing. And I think I lost myself there, the 2021 to 2024 period, just thinking back to like spending triple digits on Rafael Dolis twice in a season, a guy who ended up like not being the closer and just trying to have a little bit more discipline.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's a little bit of preview into the topic we're going to talk about, you know, in the article you wrote, the steady Eddies versus the upside, you know, kind of goes with Fab too, right? So, you know, let me ask you a question, the hammer that you referred to with Fab, what is, in your opinion, the best way to use that? Is that one big guy towards the end of the year? Is that a lot of, you know, 50, 60 guys towards the middle end of the year? You know, obviously this quicker we pick up a guy on Fab, if he's a year season long guy, the more use we get out of him. Right. So how in the past, how have you used the hammer to kind of your advantage?
I can tell you like something that scarred me a little bit was I think 3 years ago and I was in the top three in the OC and so was John Posma and he had the hammer over me. So he was able to get the players and over the last month of the season, like grind out the two step pitchers that I wanted. Like, you know, we just had a few more bucks and was able to do it. And that just really kind of, it hurt me. I think it partially kept me, you know, in that league of ours, I wasn't able to get that edge to get to first overall. And, you know, just, I want to be able to have that down the stretch that, you know, that I'm mindful of how much others have for the smaller bids. And I think over the next 2 months, I feel like I will know when the right guy comes. Like it might be Kate Anderson on a team I need pitching. It might, you know, might be a hitter. I don't know. I don't think there's like a Kurtz coming. And these rookies are coming up earlier than ever these days. But yeah, that's kind of a little balance of it.
And how are you feeling now about the you know, not doing the triple digit bids. You know, you listen to a lot of good players, you know, our colleague Mike Mager, you know, Phil, a lot of these guys do not like spending these triple digit bids. They'd rather have, you know, five shots at a $20 bid than do a $100 bid on one. Where are you at with those? Is it player dependent, obviously, but you know, where do you fall in with the thought process there?
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I think a lot of times if there's like a pitcher that I just really want, really got to have, and I see a good, you know, rest of season future for him, you know, I'll go over the 50, but I think I'm okay with letting guys go, just remembering what a long season it is and that there will be somebody like this every single week, or just being more careful not to chase closers and spending more money on, you know, $1 to $4, you know, backup guys. And if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't, because we're chasing our tails with these closers, right? Like now all of a sudden Kirby Yates got the save opportunity, but then he blew it, and Zephyr Jones pitching the seventh, and like, you know, there's just maybe like certain bullpens, it's not worth doing it. The Minnesota Twins, by the way, they have 11 saves on the season by 9 different players. So I'm not going to try to guess who the heck that's going to be.
It's it's tough in these streets if you need saves. it's brutal. Let's talk a little bit about how your teams are doing so far. You know, we're a third of the way through the season. What have you done right? What are you missing? You know, what can you fix, kind of thing?
It's always kind of the same thing where the teams where the pitching is really strong, there's something issue with the hitting, and then vice versa. I have a main event that I think is going to be in the mix for the league. Unfortunately, I just got hit by the double Drake Baldwin, Francisco Alvarez hit. So losing a bat like Baldwin is, you know, it's obviously a big hit. But yeah, I like, you know, I got a lot of Wheeler on teams. I kind of believe that, you know, he was going to be solid. My OCs are, you know, they're where I want them to be, like mostly between third and fifth place. And, you know, I'm going to grind on those. Like I'm going to get there and get there. The one set of teams that really have been doing not so well are my Gladiators. Just, you know, absolutely. Like I'm afraid to even look. When I click into one of those, some of them I have like 4 active players.
Oh man, I was really happy with myself. I didn't do any Gladiators because those made me sad when I looked at them. it's like, what was I thinking with thinking about this guy or the injuries of it's gross.
It's brutal, man. How about your teams?
You know, I'm sitting pretty good. My auction teams are much stronger than my main teams, which is an interesting dynamic. I got to really look into that. Why? See my allocation between pitching and hitting and the auctions compared to the mains. You know, I got one team in fourth in the league in my main, and another team in third that I partnered with Scott Ginstad, our buddy, on. You know, I had a main I really liked, but, you know, I think 5 or 6 of my first 12 picks are on the IL. Lindor, Langford, Roman Anthony, Suarez, Pagan, and Kirk. It's hard to have much success when you've got those types of injuries, right?
Wow. Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, yeah.
But one auction team I did want to talk about real quick. I somehow have 88 points in my hitters. So my big hitters are Vlad Guerrero, Fernando Tatis, and Taylor Ward.
Oh, wow.
Think about if that regression hits the right way, what I could do.
Yeah, Taylor Ward, I mean, listen, you go to a new team. I mean, even Pete Alonso has been in a funk, Bo Bichette. Like, we've seen this every single year. You change everything you know with a, you know, whole new environment. It takes a little bit of time to get acclimated. So I think someone like Taylor Ward, like when he's healthy, you know the numbers are going to be there. It's going to be, you know, hot summer, good ballpark. You got Gunner there figuring things out, and Alonso. Like it's, you know, Jackson Holliday coming back. It's a good offense. I think they'll get going. I think they'll be fine. I mean, like I have a main event team that my not so good one. If you look at it, it doesn't look that bad, but you know, the pitching has got 19 points, and my top pitchers are Brian Wu, Zach Wheeler, Spencer Strider, and Robbie Ray. So it's got legs, right? You got Steven Matz there. I got River Ryan stashed. And then I've just been kind of getting Sproted and Grant Holmes and, you know, stuff like Mike Burrows. So, you know, stuff like that. So I feel like that's a team that could potentially bounce back.
Yeah, you know, we're the nice thing about us, we're going to continue to grind, and you know, we're not going to stay at the bottom. Will we get into cashing? Not sure, but we're going to do everything we can to try. And so, you know, that pride and not having that team at the bottom of the standings, right?
Exactly. Some of these pitchers coming back, obviously Carlos Rodon, not a little bit shaky in his first couple starts back, even though he's been dynamite in his rehab starts. Garrett Cole, of course, making his debut first time in a year and a half, end of 2024. He will be pitching on Friday. Steven Matz was back on Wednesday, pitched four innings, looked good again. You know, a little walk rate, that whole thing. Casey Mize is back. Trevor Rogers, horrific. Bryce Miller has been great. And then Grayson Rodriguez, I guess, TBD.
Yeah, I mean, first start against the Dodgers, you got to give him a pass. Guy's stuff looked pretty good, and there was a lot of hubbub about Nolan Schenwell and his first base abilities and what that cost Grayson in that start. But if he's healthy, he's probably worth a roster. I actually just read a blurb that Shane Bieber's nearing a rehab assignment. So we know the fab dollars are going to get spent on him too.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah. That's been a slow burn. He was supposed to be ready for, you know, the beginning of the season. And this was, you know, back in February. And of course, a lot has changed. Yeah. Shane Bieber's another one we're going to be looking at. On the hitter side, you got a lot of guys out that we mentioned. We can kind of just go over them in general. You got Drake Baldwin, of course, and Francisco Alvarez, and then Ryan Jeffers, fractured hand. Altuve's out. Corey Seager, as always. Trevor Story, as usual. Elliot Ramos, Cal Raleigh, a lot of Kyle Teal, a lot of damage there with the catcher position. It's been really bad.
Yeah, there's going to be interesting bids this week on the catcher position, having a lot of replacements going. You know, as a Kyle Teal owner, I'm obviously disappointed and a little mortified about how this is going. I actually had been taking a zero in some leagues, had a third catcher in a couple, had dropped that third catcher thinking Teal was going to be back this week. 3 to 6 weeks. What are you doing with Teal right now if you have him?
So I dropped him on a 12 teamer that it's the only place I have him really where I could move. And I drafted him and just been holding. And finally, with other injuries and things like that, after I heard about the setback this weekend, I dropped him. And so, yeah, I think, I don't know, who knows how he's going to be when he even gets back, or if he has other setbacks, I think I would drop him.
What about in a 15?
And I think I would too.
Yeah. It's tough this week. That's where I'm leaning, but I mean, he feels like he could be a top 10 catcher if healthy. That's the hard part. And you know, he's going to play a lot because Edgar Cuero is not the answer, and neither is Drew Romo.
No, definitely no, not the answer.
You know, a couple other injured guys that are not catchers. Corey Seager back. That's a little scary. I got a 2 or 3 shares of Seager, thinking the quote unquote safe guy at the cheaper cost. Justin Wilson, really, you know, teams that drafted him need the batting average. You know, that shoulder, he didn't have much power to begin with. Does he have any when he comes back? And then Addison Berger. What is he? I mean, what is he doing? We keep saying he's not going to be out long, but you know, he threw that 102 mile an hour throw from the outfield, and then his elbow hurt. You know, sure seemed ominous. Trevor Story, you know, with the hernia, does he have surgery? Is he not? I know he has dropped the, you know, what, 15-20% of the leagues last week. So there's a lot of question marks up in the air about how to handle these guys.
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, and Addison Berger, I think in a 12 teamer, just don't even worry about him. And if you have him in a 15 and you don't have, like, you know, 2+ stashes or IL guys, I think you probably hold on, because at some point he will be helpful, especially in the power department. So he's somebody I would probably consider holding if you can. And then, of course, guys coming in, obviously Jackson Holliday is back, as is Jeremy Peña. Ronald Acuna Jr., first rounder, obviously, very well welcomed back to fantasy squads who drafted him. Logan O'Hoppe, wonder if he'll you know, go on a power barrage at some point. It doesn't help when you have a wrist, when you came back too fast from a wrist issue and then have like irritation in it still. And then Gleyber Torres and Eugenio Suarez should be back soon.
Yeah, I think they're both going on rehab assignments. So, you know, I have a lot of Suarez this year, so I need that power bat back in the lineup. So, you know, that list of the back ends need to match the list of the losses. So we're going to have some hard times. So we need you guys to get healthy pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah. We need all these guys back healthy ASAP as much as we can. We want to have that roster flexibility, right? You want to be able to not get stuck. I've been better at that. Like I haven't been caught with a lot of guys, you know, getting zeros unless they're injured on a Tuesday and you can't take them out. Nothing you can do about that, but at least going into a week, not scrambling in fab and not, making sure that I have my lineup coverage for the upcoming week. I wrote this thing over on Fangraphs. I was actually struggling on a topic. Usually I'm writing about, trade related and buy low, sell high stuff. But something I was putting together when I was looking at Otto Lopez and just how well he's been doing. I mean, he leads the majors in hits. He is just that top of the lineup is pretty insane with Xavier Edwards. I mean, he's got 6 home runs. It's crazy. He actually is kind of closer to league average in terms of power metrics. I mean, still pretty low, but for him, it's a big step up. You got Liam Hicks, like impossible to strike out. It's like an 8 or 9% strikeout rate and RBI leader. Like these guys are really solid. I was just thinking back to how like Otto Lopez, I remember maybe sometime in December or January, he was like, it was a target for some people. And then because of his profile, the lack of like, really massive upside, the team that he's on, it just felt like he was always somebody available past his ADP in drafts. And my thought was like, what would a team look like right now if you just built, you look back and you have a draft of like kind of all helium guys, how that would be looking. And if you had just like an all team of all like, safe and boring guys, if you will, and what that would look like. And it came out to be a pretty interesting exercise.
Yeah, it was a good article. I actually enjoyed it. And, learning each year, talking to good players, some of the best players. And again, I must preface that I think the 12 teamers, the OCs, you need to take a lot more upside risk than you need to do in the 15 teamers. The 15 teamers are a lot more grinded out, get those stats beat on the week to week, where the 12 teamers, you really need to take those swings for the fences. The name that always comes to mind with the boring players is John Posma. He's been on our show a couple of times, but he is so good about just finding that guy that people are not in on, that just produces. But, that same exercise you did in your article where you did the first, each round by round helium versus a round by round safe guy, I went through it and did it too. And you obviously can cherry pick stuff and do that. But for every safe boring guy that hit, there's a safe boring guy that missed. And for every helium guy that missed, there's a helium guy that hit. A lot of it depends on, the research you're doing, what indicators you're using. The more and more I look at this, the more and more the K rate really matters. There's getting the bat on the ball and obviously the power. But, I'll just read off some rounds that I did. First round, Ellie versus J-Ram. Who do you have there? You got the super helium and the safe guy. They're both been good, right? Mm-hmm. But give me Ellie right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even before the season, they were close. Jose Ramirez was going ahead of him. But yeah, that's a good point. And he's also established himself a little bit more reliable.
Yeah. Round two, Schwarber versus Jazz. Schwarber, pretty easy, right?
Schwarber, easy. Jazz going ahead of him.
Yep. Round three, Wyatt Langford versus Matt Olson. Matt Olson, the safe guy. Round four, Roman Anthony versus Machado. They both suck.
Yeah.
And again, we're 30% through the season. Round five, Michael Garcia versus Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
Pretty even.
Harper's been better.
Yeah, Harper's been great, but Garcia has not been terrible for the draft costs, but Royals have in general. I'll skip a couple. Round seven, Cody Bellinger versus O'Neill Cruz. Probably a wash, right?
A wash, but Cody Bellinger is also one of the reasons I wrote this, because I was looking at like just how steady he has been. He hasn't gone into any big slumps, and he has an incredible walk to K ratio. Like he's got more walks than strikeouts. He's completely kind of changed who he is as a hitter.
Yeah. But O'Neill Cruz has been amazing for where we drafted him too. A really interesting one is Bo Bichette versus Matt McClain. I mean, that's the ultimate safe versus upside, right? They're both going in round 8, and I think that's a wash in the dirt because they both have been really bad. Jumping down a little more, you know, you look at, I'll use round 15. I actually, Scott and I had this exact pick. Xander Bogaerts versus JJ Weatherholt. You know,
yeah.
Who's got the better end of that? Bogaerts has been pretty good, but Weatherholt's been really impressive. So, like I said, I think you can cherry pick these. The thing that stood out to me in looking through each round and the quote unquote safe pick versus the upside, the common denominator in the upside was speed. And that's what we're always chasing as an industry. The safe guys historically do not have speed. That's why they're safe. And so there is a blend there, especially in the 15s, where the 12s, like I said, you've got to kind of hit the nuts on those upside guys and really to really have a chance at that overall.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just looking back to all the helium. I mean, helium is disguised in different ways. Helium is somebody that maybe wasn't hyped or was kind of, you know, not a target for people early in draft season. All of a sudden manager says like, you know, hey, Jeff Hoffman, you're going to be my closer. Who cares what happened last year? And then his price skyrockets. He was going 120 in draft, 150 at some point in O-season February. All of a sudden, you see him going 60, 70th overall, right, when the closer crunch starts happening. And he loses his job, and, you know, he's a negative fantasy value. You know, Yuri Perez, Kyle Bradish, like, these are guys that, like oh, these are, oh, my God, oh, my goodness, I'm getting an SP, you know, SP1 for an SP2 price. Like, how can I not do that? Meanwhile, those guys that I was really against, the rookies with little experience that were going around 150 in February, guys like Cam Schlittler, Trey Savage, there's another big one there that I'm...
Miz,
yeah. They've been legit the best pitchers in the league, and that's a big miss by me.
Yeah, and you know, I think as an industry, and I know when I draft, I might get one of those guys, but I'm not loading up with multiple of those guys. And this was a year to load up with multiple of those guys. So it is fascinating to kind of see. Pitching has been about as difficult as it's ever been this year. I don't know if you feel the same way. I think, you know, we both nailed the Wheeler pick at the ADP he was at, but hopefully he stays healthy, right? But there's a lot of misses in the pitching this year that we're just trying to navigate through. And there's a lot of misses in the first five rounds in general. I went through that ADP and I was like, wow, there's a lot of bad players that we drafted in the top five rounds. Yeah. You know, as smart as we are as an industry, we're really not that good.
Yeah, that's true. I've been hearing a lot of discussion on that. On like, you know, it's like, oh, the, you know, the market is so sharp, but then baseball happens, right? Like people get hurt and it's crazy. And also it's such a long season. Things can change quickly, right? Like Ketel Marte was an absolute bust over the first month of the season. He's starting to pick it up, and
he got to play the Giants. So that's
all it took, huh? Yeah.
Sorry,
man. Those Diamondbacks, by the way, they're pretty hot. I think they're averaging like 7 runs a game over their last 6. Geraldo Perdomo starting to wake up. Corbin Carroll has been everything as advertised as a first round guy. Adrian Del Castillo got his 10th game at catcher. I don't even know if I want to go there.
He actually has not been very good under the hood, which was surprising because he looked like just the surface level. He was putting up numbers, but I jumped off him pretty quick. You know, one more point, and I think it ties into the next conversation, but we don't need to jump off of this, the Steady Eddies. I have 5 names written down that were quote-unquote helium upside, you know, kind of the market's, you know, flavor of the month. 3 of them are rookies and 2 of them are second-year players. And the number that stands out to me that while they're all being extremely successful is the K rate in the minors. And I'll read it off. Connor Griffin, 19% K rate as a 19-year-old in the minors. He's at 27% now and getting better. JJ Weatherholt, 14.7% K rate in the minors, 17.5 in the majors. McGonagall, 11.6 in the minors, 12.8 in the majors. Sal Stewart, 15.6 in the minors. Short stint last year, went up to 25.9, but he's at 17.9 in the majors. And then our boy Drake Baldwin, 17.2% in the minors, actually dropped it when he got to the majors last year at 15.2. And now he settled in about 20.4%. This is a common denominator in young upcoming players, the swing and miss. And it's not going to be a catch-all for everyone, but if they have this skill set that they can hit the ball hard and not strike out in the minors, that's going to translate to success in the majors, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing happening, and you know, I mean, I'm really tied into hockey, right? Like just, you know, with my son playing in youth hockey and growing up in the 90s and seeing the differences of the game now. And, you know, I'm looking at the NHL prospects now, like they're just a different breed. And it's, you know, I hate these conversations like, oh, how would, whoever, Gavin McKenna, top prospect for the guy's probably going to go number one. How is he compared to like Gretzky back in the day, or like the conversations of Jordan versus LeBron? Like it's impossible to compare them. If like you put this guy in that old setting, because it's a completely different world. But these like these new younger NHL athletes, they're a different breed. It's like a focus on skating and edge work and balance. And when you do that, everything else sort of fits in. And with baseball, the players that you are seeing, these rookies that are just maybe not like fantasy monsters, but you just know they're going to be around the league for a long time. And their top prospects, part of it is their plate discipline. It's a common denominator, like you mentioned, among all these players. Like in the 80s, it was like lots of Rob Deers, right? Like the 35% strikeout guys. And you still have those guys, of course. But I think maybe like in youth baseball, maybe like it's just a little bit more like not just going for the big swing and miss. And I know you're, you know, probably, I don't know your experiences with, you know, your son playing and everything, but like, it feels like it's sort of changing to a more, you know, less of the swing for the fences type approach.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of twofold. I look at it in every sport, there's no comparison. Every single athlete is bigger, faster, stronger, and smarter than they were even 10 years ago. You look at all the way down to golf, hockey, tennis. I mean, look at field goal kickers. When we were young, you know, a 50-yard field goal was a coin flip, and now it's a chip shot. You know, these guys are, the training is so advanced now. They're specific. They're isolating it. But that being said, that means baseball's never been harder. These pitchers are everybody's throwing 98 plus. You know, how many relievers used to throw over 95? One in each bullpen? Mm-hmm. Now, if there's one that doesn't, you're surprised. So these guys are coming up and they are ready to play baseball. The training, the seasoning, the focus. And I don't know if it's lack of a home run swing or not, but it's the specific what they're working on. And they're ready to contribute immediately rather than being overwhelmed by the show. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to continue to see this. These college guys, the Nick Kurtz that make this jump extremely quick, which we just never saw that before. It took a very unique player. And, you know, you got the Weatherholt, you got the McGonagall, you got the Griffin. These guys just got drafted, and they're already mm-hmm. not only playing in the majors but producing at a very high level. Yeah. It takes special talents, don't get me wrong, and it's not a catch-all for everyone. But these guys that are good are going to be good quicker, younger, better. Yeah. And it'll be interesting, you know, with the whole CBA negotiations, how that works with mm-hmm. getting into free agency quicker, things like that, because the game's changing rapidly in front of us mm-hmm. too, and how we play it.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. The whole world, everything, like people live longer. There's, you know, everything that's advanced through technology, you know, the isolation in training and just everything you mentioned, and it makes so much sense. This rookie class this year, I mean, so many guys are just coming up and contributing like right away. Talking about the rookies, rookie of the year candidates, first of all, I have a question for you. How much does, I don't think I even know this, like how much is like a, like contributing to like to winning a division or getting into the playoffs affect a rookie of the year award? Vote.
You know, I don't know. You know, historically with these awards, the better the team are, the easier it is. I think rookie of the year, that's definitely a lot less than a Cy Young or an MVP because those are more team related votes. Even Cy Young is extremely individual, but you need the wins to get that. I would say the rookie of the year is probably the most stats based rather than team based asset. Now, if it's close, then, you know, if a a rookie's helping their team make the playoffs, that could be a coin flip. But historically, you know, it's just the best rookie, not the one the best team.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm looking at the AL Rookie of the Year favorite race right now, and it's right now in the AL, it's kind of between Murakami and McGonigal. And so from the discussion of who's going to be the Rookie of the Year now, I think it really only matters from like a betting perspective if you're looking to get an edge somewhere. Like, for example, I was thinking that, or I came on to a betting podcast earlier this morning, The Hammer, and I was thinking about how, like, you know, I was digging in and looking at like that, man, Trevor Savage, since he's been back, has been on an absolute tear. And if he continues to stay healthy and other things happen, like McGonigal continues to not hit home runs and his average decreases and Murakami, you know, cools off a little bit, the White Sox cool off, like somebody like Savage at 25-1 is just a lot better bet than we've got McGonigal and Murakami, like much closer to, you know, to even money. So it's interesting, man. I mean, what do you think of this AL Rookie of the Year race? Does it look to you like Murakami is just going to, if he hits 40 home runs, is he going to win this thing?
Yes. Does he hit 40 home runs? That's the question. Because, you know, there's still no book on him. And, you know, we all know that major league teams are smart. Major league pitchers are smart. Once they find a way to get him out, everyone could exploit it. The thing that I love about Murakami that is unique to his profile is how many walks he's taken. You know, that double digit walk rate, he's not up there swinging and missing at every pitch, that chase rate. He's trying to get his pitch. He doesn't hit it all the time, but when he does, it's making a lot of damage. It's interesting. I think there's going to be a pretty big lull for Murakami at some point, with the adjustment and then the longer MLB season. There's going to be that rookie wall hit. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy that I'm looking on this list right now, they're both pitchers, Peyton Tolley. I think I would love to put some money on for Rookie of the Year. And then even Parker Messick. Those two really stand out to me, if they can stay healthy. Because the hitters, like you said, in McGonigal, he's not hitting homers. He's a great baseball player, but he's not necessarily the fantasy player. But he has to put up those stats in order to win that award. So I think between those two pitchers, and you mentioned Savage already, those would be the three. And then, you know, Travis Bazana has really come out with like a house on fire, you know, much better than his minor league numbers. He's made a huge impact as well.
Yeah, and Bazana, the first overall pick. And they have two. All of a sudden, the Guardians team doesn't look that bad. Remember how, like, oh, besides J-Ram, they're just so boring, and now Stephen Kwan sucks. But hey, look. Now you got, you know, Angel Martinez is hitting well, getting close to double-digit homers and steals. Chase DeLauder, he's been staying healthy, and he's been pretty much everything as advertised. You know, most impressive about him, so this is a guy that had really good plate discipline in the minors and pretty much like a, you know, close to a even walk-to-K ratio. He's doing the same thing in the majors. I mean, so far – so on top of an ISO that's nearly 200, he's got a 12.5% walk rate and an 11% K rate. So for a rookie, I mean, that's just incredible. And he still, of course, most of those home runs came in that first week, whatnot. He just stole his first couple of bases of the season, happened in a single game. So, you know, these Guardians don't look so bad. And Chase DeLauder looks great to me.
He does. He does. I still can't get over all the victory laps after the first weekend. It almost made Chase DeLauder dead to me. Showing their draft board, and you know, I got him in the 19th round. I'm so smart that, but he's been pretty good. You know, the power settled down, but he's a legit hitter, and that lineup desperately needs him.
It's funny. I like, you know, like, by the way, we've already talked about this, but like my victory lap, or like just kind of, I'm just not on Twitter too much. Like I'll kind of like look at stuff, but I'm just not getting into the mix, because then it takes away from work time, takes away from fantasy time, you know, from family time. And I'm always like, it consumes you, right? So I'm kind of staying out of it. But like, I feel like I should have got some award for, you know, for my live main event for taking DeLauder and Jordan Walker as my outfield 4 and 5.
There's no awards for that, Vlad. Sorry. It's called winning the league.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I'm winning in home runs and RBIs, but now I got other things. That's the beautiful thing about fantasy. It's just such a puzzle. Like, everything has to click. It's not just one part or the other.
Yeah, for sure. You can hit in, 80% of it and still not win the league.
Another guy in the AL there, Samuel Basayo. He's been just pretty solid all year, and just like, he's a big part of that mix. Like, what expectations do you have for him? Like, for me, I think there's going to be a big power surge at some point where he just gets a whole bunch of bombs.
And with all the issues that the Orioles have had with injuries, it really did not make him a platoon player that I anticipated him to be. So him playing almost every day now is really mattering and racking up those stats, and he's everything as advertised. Boy can hit, almost looks like a American League catcher version of Jordan Alvarez at the plate.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. He was in the lineup on Wednesday against the lefty. He was DHing and hitting six. So It's a very platoon-esque team, but he seems like he might be kind of escaping that. Jackson Holliday has been in platoon for a while. Colton Cowser, they're not going to let hit against lefties. They have those bats, on the bench, like these guys like Jeremiah Jackson, Weston Wilson, Blaze Alexander. Like, they can just pop them into the lineup against lefties. So very platoon-friendly lineup.
Yeah, they might not let Colton Cowser hit against righties anytime soon either. He's terrible.
He did have his first home run and his first stolen base this week, so maybe.
First combo meal.
Yeah. Okay, everybody, it's happening. Michael Scott, Jeff. All right, what about – let's go over to the NL side. It's a much more exciting race over there. Right now I'm looking at the favorites being J.J. Weatherholt and Nolan McLean. Connor Griffin and Sal Stewart are right in the mix. Sal Stewart, by the way, I don't know why he's not – I guess kind of like the favorite, because I guess it's because fantasy people aren't the one doing this, right? If you're looking from a fantasy perspective, he's one of only two hitters with double digit home runs and strikeouts. He's a top 13 or 14 player overall, if you're looking at a player rater, and he's just a stud, but it's going to be a tough competition here with this NL race.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one that jumped out to me with Sal Stewart. Give me all the money on him. That I he's my biggest FOMO of the big leagues. I was in on him and I didn't push him up enough. Not only that, he's playing third base, he's playing second base, he's playing first base for them. And he's basically, their success has gone as Sal Stewart has played. When he was in a funk a couple of weeks ago, they didn't win a game. And now he's snapped out of it again. To me, he's the best player on that sheet. I mean, obviously Nolan McLean is throwing wiffle balls up there. But he's surprisingly hittable, or with how much his pitches move. He's kind of an interesting pitcher to own, because you think he'd just be unhittable because his balls are moving 20 inches, it seems like. But he gives up runs every start. But as much as I like J.J. Weatherholt and Connor Griffin, and those guys are going to be amazing baseball players, give me Sal Stewart out of that list.
Yeah, he just fits right in. I mean, a lot of these guys do. I know Connor Griffin got off to a slow start, but I mean, I think he's going to steal 30 bases this year. I think the power is going to come. It's just part of the profile. The Pirates are actually, decent. They have good pitching. He went 4-for-5 the other day. He's just a beast, really coming into his own, and so much younger than the rest of these guys. J.J. Weatherholt, like, literally just steps in, top prospect and all, but has just been their leadoff man all year. And the lineup looks alive, right? Like, they're up there in runs scored. Remember how much crap they were getting for, like, oh, this is a bad offense. I was looking at it originally, like, if things work out right, it may not be that bad of an offense. If, like, Ivan Herrera stays healthy, if Jordan Walker comes of age, like, and these things are happening. And J.J. Weatherholt has been their everyday leadoff man. And a whole bunch of stolen bases, hasn't been caught stealing yet. He's got some home runs. It's not even 24. He's actually only 3 months younger than Jordan Walker, by the way.
I'm going to get you a Jordan Walker rookie card and send it to you.
Yeah, I would love that.
Weatherholt is interesting. In the spring training, I was listening to an interview, and Mason Wynn said he's the most athletic guy on the team. And that should have cued me on to getting him some more. When you hear other players talk about a rookie like that, that should perk your ears up a little more, because that's not just some generic, beat writer or coach speak. Players are not going to hand out compliments like that very often. And I think even Paul Skene said it about Connor Griffin, right? This guy's going to help us win a lot of games this year, I think was his quote. Mm-hmm. And that was when he got sent down. These guys are you know, I think this is probably going to be a generational rookie class. At least the top six or seven of them, they're very special players. But give me, like I said, I'm going back to Sal Stewart. Give me him all day. But you made the perfect point. The Cardinals were supposed to be a bad offense this year, and Weatherholt has kind of ignited that entire team to be somewhat decent this year, including an above average offense.
Oh, you think they're hot now? Just wait till Lars Nootbaar is back next week. Then it's all systems go, baby.
You said Josh Baez wrong.
Josh Baez is a stud. He looks really good. Let me ask you this: in fantasy football, in like the NFC, there is a thing like you, Modica, like a lot of the players that win a lot have a thing where there's just like kind of like those guys, like, you know, Nelson also. They're like these players in the draft pool that they just, you just know when it comes to draft time, they're going to get heavily pushed up. And a lot of those times those guys end up hitting. Do you end up working out? So with this class, could we have baseball rookies and how well they're producing and thinking back to how some of them, because we weren't sure if they'd be up, were going, you know, around 300 ADP for a while in early drafts, Weatherholt, McConagle, you know, Griffin was 250 at some point. Sal Stewart was in the 200s. You think we might get tricked next season into, you know where I'm getting at? Like, it's okay. Let's just jump these guys and then we get screwed with it.
Yeah. I mean, each year's different. Each rookie class is different. And you know, we are an overreactive community. The thing about football that's different is these rookies come in and produce right away from day one, where the baseball draft, they have to go through multiple levels to get there. And so as I do think rookies are going to be more productive quicker, it's interesting. Baseball pushes rookies up much higher in the drafts than football does. And I think that mainly in football, it's due to concerns in playing time, where baseball, you know, if they're in the lineup, they're one of the nine guys, where football, you need touches. But yeah, I think that's kind of the main difference between the baseball and football. And I can promise, just like we did with that big pitching with the Brian Wu year, when all those pitchers came up, we overreacted the next year on the pitching fab and it did not hit for us. So we're going to do that next year, and it's probably going to bite us in the tush, and yeah, we're not going to have much success from it. So that goes back to your Steady Eddies, right?
That's right. Everything links back. By the way, speaking of Steady Eddies, TJ Rumfield, former Yankees prospect, he is really a Steady Eddie for the Colorado Rockies. It's nothing like crazy. It's, you know, what, six homers, 25 runs batted in, 20 runs, hitting 275 with a 271 XBA. I want to ask you this because I think you are, grew up playing baseball. Like, I was, you know, playing baseball outside and watching games. I wasn't, you know, growing up playing hockey, so a little different. Tell me this about manager Warren Schaefer. Why would he have TJ Rumfield in the lineup every day and against lefties and hitting high against lefties when TJ Rumfield has actually been bad against lefties? He's got like a 47 WRC plus, no extra base hits. What is it about him? Is something, I mean, he's a first baseman. Like, what, why would Warren Schaefer play him against lefties too in this case?
Yeah, he's one of only three Rockies that are everyday players. They're platooning everyone else. And that's probably the answer. They don't have enough players on the roster to platoon him. You know, their platoon partner at first base is also left-handed, and Edward Julian. And so they really don't have any other options at first base from what I could see. And Lord knows, I don't ever want to speak for a Colorado Rockies front office person, because nobody knows what they're doing. I think they're platooning six other spots. And so that's the main reason Rumfield's getting everyday at bats.
By the way, is it going to be Juan Mejia season this week?
I actually picked up Senzatella in a couple of leagues last week, because he got a standard save and it doesn't look like it's him. So there we go with the Rockies bullpen wasting money again.
Yeah. I mean, he's been around in the Rockies organization for a long time, talking about Juan Mejia, and dude, guy throws heat. It's like a 98. I mean, it's not like, you know, Miz or Mason Miller type stuff, but, so which means it'll get blasted. But Senzatella is just, he's just too valuable for them as a pitcher, he's like their only good pitcher for him to close, right? If you just save him for the ninth, it's kind of a waste for him, but it sucks for fantasy owners.
Yeah, it's our own fault.
Yeah. any other rookies kind of wrap things up the conversation? Anyone's your, not even the races, but just as far as like guys you think will actually stick around, be fantasy worthy among the, you know, Ryan Waldschmidt, AJ Ewing, Boltes, Carter Jensen's, Eldridge's. Sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned Eldridge. Sorry.
You know, I actually was going to mention Eldridge. I'm holding on to him right now, thinking at some point the Giants are just going to be forced to play him. I'm hoping they do because, you know, we all know prospects come up and sit. That's not how they learn to play. But the guy looks like the real deal at the plate. He's going to strike out a bunch, but the power, I mean, I think he just hit the hardest ball in the majors yesterday at 113 miles an hour. Yeah, I mean, he's the one I'm watching closely because as a Giants fan, the key to their future, a lot of hinges on his success. They need him to develop into that Nick Kurtz-like person, but they also have to give him the runway to do it. So I don't know if they will. The other guy is Colt Emerson. You know, he's probably closer to that Weatherholt-McGonigal group, with just a little less talent, but he came up and started playing. He's going to be the everyday third baseman. And again, this goes back to what players are saying. J.P. Crawford just went to the coach and offered to play third base for him so he can move back to his natural position. That tells you how good that kid is and how much respect he has from the team.
That or he's want to make sure he has a job.
benefit of the doubt, Vlad.
Yeah. Yeah, this is great, man. It was nice and quick. Kept this under an hour. Obviously, we can continue talking about, I mean, just dive into these rookies. It's a phenomenal class. It's really nice. Hopefully, we get some good, hopefully we get some positive, like, regression on the injuries, like maybe less of those injuries, but we just know that's just not going to happen.
That's an oxymoron. It's like a cheap lawyer.
No such thing, baby. No such thing.
No offense to all the lawyers listening.
Yeah, so definitely a few listening there. All right, everybody, have a wonderful long weekend. Just to give you a heads up, we'll let you know on our schedule here coming up. Jason's gonna be out of town next week. I'm gonna be going with my family soon on a vacation. I haven't been in actually a couple years, so yeah, looking forward to it. I think I booked the plane. You know, we booked the flights. I'm actually going to be flying while on Sundays, where I can actually crank out some of the articles, the Fab articles. So I won't leave you hanging. If there's any part of it I can't do, I got, you know, we got great guys on the team, Mike Mager, other people step up and help out. But yeah, that's it. Any parting words as we head out here for the weekend?
Now, everyone enjoy their Memorial Day. Enjoy the barbecue. Enjoy baseball. Good luck, everyone. Appreciate you listening.
For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.